Good morning. Thank you so much for being here. Many other places you could have been. And you've chosen to be with the people of God. And you are to be commended for that. I owe you my thanks. It's a decision that would seem on its surface, especially on a Sunday morning, when we're gathered together at a time like this, a place like this, to be a relatively obvious thing. Where else would we want to be? But it's not always that way. And it's certainly not always that way for all people. I want to focus a little bit on Psalm 27 here this morning, and particularly a phrase that's given to us in verse 4. One thing I have asked from the Lord that I will seek. One thing. Have you ever used that terminology before? All I want is this. If I could only have this. All I want for Christmas is this. Just one thing. If I could just get that one thing, I'd be happy. If I could just get that one thing, I would be content. If I could just get that one thing, I'd be able to make it through the week. What is that one thing? It depends on the person, I suppose. If I could just have a family. If I could just get a different boss or a different job. If I could just have a trip to Disney World. If I could just get that one thing, it would just change everything. It changed my whole life. It changed my well, and it might change your day. If it were big enough, I suppose it might change your week. But would it really change your life? Would it really be a life-altering thing? Would it be something that you look back on 20 years later and said, that one thing really did make a difference? Perhaps yes, perhaps no. But how often when we think about the one thing do we think about God? The one thing that I want is a closer relationship with God. The one thing that I want is to feel stronger in my faith. The one thing that I want is to go to heaven when I die. I've had conversations like this. I bet you have too. Where somebody says, if I could just get away for a week. That's all I want. The only thing that I want in the world is just to get away from my job, from my family, from whatever for a week. Just a vacation. That's all that I want. I'd never ask for anything else. And the smart aleck in me says, you mean you don't want to go to heaven anymore? And if I do, in fact, say something like that, well, I get the high roll at that point. Oh, of course I want that. And maybe they do. And maybe it's just complaining in the moment. But I'll be candid with you, brethren. I'm not sure that this is the case for every person who calls himself a Christian. I'm not sure that is the one thing. I think that it's very easy for us to get caught up in the moment, get caught up in the problems and the difficulties and the challenges of physical life, to the point where we actually do not keep our eyes on heaven. Where if we were given not just 5 seconds, but given 5 hours to think about this. If you could only have one thing, what would that one thing be? Would the answer come back heaven? I don't know. What David says, one thing I've asked from the Lord that I shall seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to meditate in his temple. That's the one thing. And I think that he may have some eternal implications behind that. Certainly it's easy to read the passage that way. I don't think it's inappropriate to read the passage that way. And of course the literal house of God was not constructed yet. David was planning that, or at least began to plan it at some point. His son actually built it. But I think probably closer to the core of what David is trying to say is, I want to be in the presence of God. I want to be in the presence of the people of God. I want to dwell in God's house. And I want to have some assurance that I will never have to leave, that I can be here forever, to dwell in God's house. What a marvelous thing that would be. I'm told that children in orphanages dream every day, every night, of being adopted. Or maybe even be reclaimed by their original birth parents. What their next life would be. And they dream about what it would be to live in this new house with this new family. And it's always a wonderful dream. Nobody ever dreams about being adopted by a family of homeless people or something like that. It's always the prince and the princess. It's always the multimillionaire. It's always the kind-hearted ones, the ones who really, really will love them and take care of them forever. Do you realize, as the children of God, that is exactly what has happened to you? You have been adopted into the family of the King. You have been welcomed into this house, and you never, ever have to leave. This is where we behold the beauty of the Lord. Verse number 4 tells us, behold the beauty of the Lord. Seeing Him up close, seeing who God is and what God is all about, from as close a perspective as we can manage in the flesh. Now, even as Christians, we cannot do this in its fullness. We're not capable of doing so. But there is a very real sense in which we, as the people of God, can look into the face of Jesus Christ as is painted for us in the Scriptures. And to an even more limited sense, look into the face of our brothers and sisters in Christ. And we can see the presence of God. We can see the fellowship that exists, not just between us and God's other people, but between us and God Himself. That's the fellowship that John preached. 1 John 1 verse 3 tells us that. That this fellowship that they extended to their brethren was not just fellowship with the apostles. It was fellowship with Jesus Christ Himself. It was fellowship with heavenly beings, with God, with deity. What an amazing thing that would be. And surely in a situation like this, if we were welcomed into this fellowship, we would want to have as much of it as we possibly could. The little boy, the little girl that's adopted into the family of the King doesn't dream about spending their weekends in the palace. You spend every night and every day there. Well, why would you be anywhere else? And that's where we are. As the people of God, we strive to make this more and more the case. It's not just a matter of we got in the door and we're done. But we want to extend this fellowship. We want to deepen this fellowship. To know Jesus, Paul says in Philippians chapter 3, verse 10 and 11. This is our aspiration. We want to know Him deeply and fully. And again, why wouldn't we want to do that? I'm not suggesting that you can't come to know Him on a Sunday morning, because you can. But why would you content yourself with a relationship that you can build in an hour or maybe 2 hours in a week? If you truly value being in the presence of God, if you value being in His holiness, surely constantly, on a constant, ongoing basis, in a public sense, in a private sense, morning, noon, and night, you're always pursuing these things. And when we do that, when we are welcomed into His fellowship, there are privileges that attach to that. And I'm not suggesting that simply knowing God and being in the presence of God wouldn't be good enough, because it would be. But there's more than that. There are actual benefits that come in this family. Not the least of which is protection. He will conceal me, the text says, in his tabernacle, in verse number 5. In the day of trouble, He will conceal me in His tabernacle. If you know much about tents, you realize that there's not a whole lot of protection to be had in a tent. That's if the bear comes, or if the high wind comes, or even a good solid rain. You could be potentially in some trouble. But the tabernacle of God is considerably different. Now, I'm not just talking about the structure itself. We're talking here in symbolic terms about God's presence, about God's house, about God's dwelling place. When a person in one of these nomadic tribes in Bible days would have welcomed somebody into the shelter of his tent, the shelter of his tabernacle. It's not just a matter of if it starts raining, you're going to have a roof over your head. That's not it. That's it, but it's more than that. Far more than that. Being in the presence of this host in this relationship meant protection. And you see some rather extreme examples, and we're not going to burden you with this, in the Bible, of people who had extended hospitality to somebody else, and because of that, that guest's life was in their hands. And they would do anything, literally anything, to protect that person. They took hospitality seriously back then. And God takes it seriously now. When he welcomes us into his tent, when he brings us into his tabernacle, he promises us shelter. He assures us we are going to be safe there. It may not seem like it in the time. We may doubt, we may question. We may have trouble for an extended period of time, as the church in Revelation 2 verse 10 is told. But be faithful, he says. Be faithful unto death, or until death, and I will give you the crown of life. This is what happens to the one who overcomes, the one who is able not only to come into this dwelling, but to rejoice in this dwelling and stay in this dwelling. There are no shackles in this tabernacle. If you want to leave, you can leave. But if you have a proper appreciation for what God is doing for you here, surely that would be the last thing in the world that you would want, especially considering that it's not just what he is keeping away from you. It is also what he is bringing into you. If we humble ourselves in the presence of God, he promises to lift us up. He promises to give us the glory that we desire. And more so. You want to be the child of the king? You can do that. You want to reign over your enemies? You can do that. God promises us this. A victory. An honor. A respect. Not just from our enemies, although we'd like that. But even more so, respect and honor from God himself. Having him acknowledge us. Thou good and faithful servant. He tells the faithful stewards in Matthew chapter 25. Enter in the joy of thy Lord. What a wonderful thing that would be to hear. I don't know if those are going to be the actual words we'd hear. I don't especially care about the actual words. But anything along those lines of, you're welcome here. You have a place here. This is your home for all of eternity. Anything along those lines, I'd be more than happy to hear when the moment came. The Lord will take me up. Verse 10, for my father and mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me up. What a wonderful expression that is. This confidence that we have. That victory is going to be ours. That we will in fact overcome the world. That our faith is in fact going to be vindicated. I would have despaired, skipping ahead to verse 13, unless I believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. There is a very real sense, even in this life, when we are told we will see the power of God. And even when we don't see it, even when we are unsure, we have eternal things to look forward to. And no matter what these short-term blessings may or may not be inside of God's tabernacle, we are privileged to be partakers in it. I'd like to read a couple of verses from 1 John chapter 5. Talking about, again, this fellowship that we enjoy with God. Really, throughout the book of 1 John, we're talking about this. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. This is how we show our love for God. I think that's the love of God that he's talking about here, the love that we have for God.
And we keep his commandments. And his commandments are not burdensome, for whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this, the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is the one who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? If you have come to this trusting and obedient faith, if you acknowledge not just one time at your baptism, but throughout your life, I believe with all my heart that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And not only do I believe that, but I'm going to allow that to govern every decision that I make for the rest of my life. This is the victory that we win over the devil, day after day after day. This faith overcomes the world. And the world is powerful. The world is dominant. The world is going to win, quite frankly, most of the battles, the overwhelming number of battles. But it doesn't have to beat us. If you maintain your faith, if you remember what it is to be a child of God, how blessed your privilege is to dwell in his house, we have confidence that the trials and tribulations that take place out there on the outside do not have to affect us. At least they don't have to affect us to the point where we have to leave this tabernacle. Nothing is going to happen out there that will hurt us in here. It's like I've heard many times, and you've probably heard it too, you've probably heard me say it. It's not the water on the outside of the boat that sinks it. It's the water on the inside of the boat. It doesn't matter how much water is on the outside. Inside the boat, inside the ark of safety, there is peace, there is hope, there is victory, there is security. God has made it so. And this is what it's like to dwell in the house of God. Let me talk for a couple of minutes here about what this one thing is not. If we were to ask God for one thing, and we couldn't ask for what we should ask, or for whatever reason we weren't mindful to ask for that, what might we ask for? We might ask for immediate help, and wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? My house is on fire right now. I want my house to be not on fire right now. I need help immediately, God, in the short term. And usually we're talking about physical things. Usually we're talking about comfort. We're talking about security. We're talking about relationships. We're talking about finances. We're talking about things that are impacting our daily life here on earth in the short term. We would love for God to help, and oftentimes he does. And we're certainly not suggesting that you shouldn't ask for such things. Jesus authorized us to pray for our daily bread. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's not the one thing. And then we would acknowledge that that's not the one thing. And what if it were the one thing? What if the only thing God offered us was immediate help? And what if he gave it to us every time we asked? I would suggest to you that if God were to banish all of our short-term problems, that would limit the relevance of God in our daily life. And what I mean by that is this. The Apostle Paul went through a series of trials. He describes a great many specific instances in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. And then he goes on to talk about something that appears to be more specific. He calls it a thorn in his flesh in chapter 12. And he besought the Lord three times that this thorn be removed, and the Lord said, no, you're going to have to deal with this. And he decided that he was going to rejoice in his weakness. He was going to rejoice in his suffering. Because when he suffered for the cause of Christ, it reminded him that he needed to lean on the Lord. And the implication is that if God were to fix all of our problems, if Jesus were to fix all of our problems, then maybe we could get so comfortable and so blessed in the short term that we would forget that we needed God. If that sounds preposterous, let me tell you, there is chapter after chapter after chapter of history of the people of God who did exactly that. Not only did they do it, they were warned about it. Moses told them repeatedly in the book of Deuteronomy, this is what's going to happen.
God's going to give you everything he promised, everything you could possibly want, and then after you get it, you're going to forget about him. Maybe it's a blessing that we do not get everything we want. Because when we find ourselves in need, as the people of God, when we find ourselves lacking, when we find ourselves hurting, that's another opportunity to reach out, to ask for help, to ask for guidance, to ask for support, to ask for comfort, which he is more than willing to offer to us. Family support. Here's an odd phrase in verse 10. We read it a few moments ago. For my father and my mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me up. Now, I don't know if this is literally talking about family problems that David himself was having in the flesh. That seems to be the natural reading of this. Maybe he was actually estranged from his parents at this point. Maybe there's some poetic license in here, but it seems like there's actual difficulties, hardships. And of course, David went through a great many short-term problems, especially in his dealings with Saul. And I'm not aware of any passage that tells us that David sought comfort, sought security, sought safety back home. He was wandering all over this territory, probably never too far from Bethlehem, but no indication he ever went home. I wonder why that's the case. Maybe he wasn't welcome home. I don't know. I do know this, that when we have people who are intimately close with us, people who know us better than we know ourselves, and these close loved ones, and we mean that in every sense of the word, loved ones, when they refuse to support us, when they refuse to help us, when they refuse to be there for us in our time of need, that hurts deeply. We would love for that to not happen. That would be great if that could not happen. And maybe it's not happening for you. And give God the praise for that if that's the case. But if it is the case that you're family members are not as supportive as they might be, we can have confidence that God is supportive of us. That God will be there for us. The Lord will, in fact, take me up. And again, maybe this is a blessing in disguise. Maybe if we had all the help we could possibly want from family members, that would cause us to lean on God less. Do we believe that God is all sufficient? Do we believe that God will give us everything that we need? All of the comfort, all of the security, all of the peace. If such is the case, if we do believe that, that means we can do without the other. And maybe not having, and I'm not suggesting that's a good thing that your family members are treating you this way, if such is the case in your life. That's not what I'm saying. But if it is the case, maybe being forced to lean on the Lord more, maybe being forced to do with only the comfort of the Lord, is not a bad thing. Maybe that is, in fact, a blessing. Paul says, I can do all things through the love of mom and dad, or the love of a good woman, or the comfort of my children, or all of the above. That's not what he says in Philippians chapter 4, verse 13. I can do all things through Christ Jesus, who strengthens me. Jesus is the one who helps us endure. Jesus is the one who helps us succeed, who lifts us up when we need lifting up. We appreciate it more than we can say when we get it from other sources. But we need it from God. He's the only one who we really need it from. And if the comfort and solace provided by family interferes with that somehow, convinces us that we don't need Jesus, and there are many, many people out there in the world who are getting all the family love they could possibly handle and are convinced they don't need Jesus. They need less family. They need more Jesus. Because he's offering them more than they realize is available to them. Fair treatment. Verse number 12 talks about this. I would have despaired unless I'd seen, I believe I would see. Well, that's verse 13, I'm sorry, verse 12. Do not deliver me over to the desire of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen against me, and such as breathe out violence. This just in. Bad people are out there. Bad people doing bad things to good people. Bad people getting away with it, at least in the short term. And we read about this in the news, we see it in our own lives, and we shake our fist at the sky, and we think, why does it have to be this way? Surely if we vote for candidate X or candidate Y, if we pass such and such a law, it'll get better. And people have been saying this for centuries. And things seem, some days, just get worse and worse and worse. Well, as long as Satan's ruling the world, things are going to be bad. I think we should just kind of write that off. What we can have confidence in is even if and when, might be a better way of phrasing it, when we encounter this unfair treatment, that this doesn't have to be the end of the world either. Because if somehow God would guarantee that everything would always go right for us, and by right I mean fair, I mean get your way all the time, I mean get justice all the time. If the bad guys always got it in the short term, if good people were always vindicated, that would limit God's ability to mete out justice, wouldn't it? That would mean that God is unfair when it doesn't work out in the short term. Isn't God entitled, as God, to rule in his way, to mete out justice in his way, in his time? And if it's his will that bad people get away with it in the short term, it's not our place to complain about that. It's our place to accept that, to trust in him, and to believe that there will be justice eventually. Oftentimes in this life, but especially in the life to come. Hebrews chapter 10 refers to this confidence that we need to have, that we oftentimes lose because of the trials of this life. Hebrews 10 verse 36 and following. For you have need of endurance, the writer tells us here. Pushing through, that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. For yet in a very little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. That clearly is God's judgment there. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. It's not enough to just trust in God. We have to trust in God all the way, including and particularly when it's not going the way we want. But, he says in verse 39, we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. Are you one of these people? Are you a Christian? Are you someone who trusts in God and believes that in the long term, in God's way, in God's time, it will be okay? No matter how many bad guys get away with it, no matter how bad the bad guys get, it doesn't matter. God does not promise these things as the one thing that we look for. He has something better in mind for us. So he asks us to wait. Wait for the Lord. That's an interesting concept. I touched on this on Facebook this week. The idea of waiting is derived, and I'm about to start discussing Hebrew roots here, so just be careful, you might get hurt. But I'm told by those who know such things that the word that is oftentimes in the Old Testament translated as wait or waiting, that this has reference to a bonding process that's oftentimes affiliated with a twisting. A connection, an interwoven kind of thing. We had a blowout last Wednesday, bringing Kylie home from school.
I don't know if you've ever seen the inside of a car tire. It's not an especially pleasing sight. And if you're looking at the inside of a car tire, pretty much you're having a bad day. That's not a good thing. But it's an interesting sight. Because nowadays, tires pretty much all are the steel-belted radial type things, right? And there's this mesh of steel fiber on the inside. And I don't know how many of them there are. I'm not inclined to count. It doesn't matter. Because they are so tightly interwoven. They are so connected, bonded together, weaved together, braided together, that they become a unit. They are no longer seen as independent one of another. They are all one. They are all united. I wonder if that's what waiting on the Lord is supposed to be like. That we have welcomed God into our lives and welcomed God into our hearts and made Him our King, our Master. And now every significant decision in our life is about God. We trust in Him completely. We have welcomed Him into the deepest recesses of our heart and told Him to rule there and submitted to His rule there. And there is no part of our life anymore that is not given over to trusting in God. If that's where we are, and where we are means not getting what we want in the short term, can we find our contentment there? Can we wait for the Lord? If God is that present in our life, this is what we are going to do. What we are glad to do. We want to strengthen our faith in the wisdom that God offers to us through His Word. And in the end, you're not going to get it any other way than reading your Bible. Faith comes by hearing and hearing by the Word of Christ, the text says. This is where your faith is. I am astonished. I continue to be astonished at people who complain about the quality of their faith and yet never pick up their Bible. How do you think you got from point A to point B? And what do you think might help in this situation? And why are we so determined to not do that? Trusting in God, leaning on God, leaning on God's Word. Because He has always said that His way was better than our way. Our thoughts are not His thoughts. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. The text says in Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 23. We know that. Intuitively, we know that. That God is better than we are. God is smarter than we are. And therefore, if God thinks that we need to wait, if God thinks that we need to endure a little bit more, and a little bit more of what we don't especially want, then we can trust in God. We can believe that this is going to work out for our benefit. We need to strengthen our hope for better things. This confidence that we can have and should have, that our world is going to improve and get better. I got a wrong passage up there. But look at chapter 4 of Hebrews and verse number 11. I think this is the passage that I had in mind. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 11. Therefore, let us be diligent to enter that rest so that no one will fall through following the same example of disobedience. Trusting in Him, not falling. Leaning on His Word again, verse number 12. The Word is living and active and sharper than any two-edged sword. Having that confidence that God is going to see us through, that God is going to strengthen us and build us up for eternal things, for this eternal rest that's waiting for us. And again, God's not changing the rules on us here. This has always been what He told us was going to happen. Jesus told us early on that we were supposed to be storing up our treasures in heaven instead of on earth. This is where our priority needs to be. This is where our focus needs to be always. Not that this life is going to work out the way we want, but that next life will.
And that God will sustain us and help us and guide us through this life, including through the hardships of this life. And through the blessings, which oftentimes can be as challenging as the hardships. Strengthening our resolve along those same lines there. To stay the course, to endure, to finish this course that God has charted out for us. Paul says toward the end of his life, this is what he has done. He's gotten to the point where he can declare himself a victor already. Exactly how many months of life he had left is unclear. He certainly had some time left, or at least believed that he did. But he knew that the course that he had charted for his life was right. He had done everything that God needed him to do. And this is what we need to do, to strengthen our own resolve, that we need to work through this, that we need to have this endurance that we read about in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 36 and following, just a few moments ago. We are not the ones who are going to shrink back. We are going to persevere. We're going to succeed in these difficult times. It's not easy to wait for the Lord. But if this is the one thing that we really want, I'm going to read this again. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the defense of my life. Whom shall I dread? When evildoers came upon me to devour my flesh, my adversaries and my enemies, they stumbled and fell. Though a host encamp against me, my heart will not fear. Though war arise against me, in spite of this, I shall be confident. One thing I've asked of the Lord, that I shall seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, and to meditate in his temple. For in the day of the trouble, he will conceal me in his tabernacle. In the secret place of his tent, he will hide me. He will lift me up on a rock. And now my head will be lifted up above my enemies around me. And I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing, yes, I will sing praises to the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice, and be gracious to me, and answer me. When you said, seek my face, my heart said to you, your face, Lord, I shall seek. Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my help. Do not abandon me, nor forsaken me, O God of my salvation. For my father and mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me up. Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me in a level path because of my foes. Do not deliver me over to the desire of my adversaries. For false witnesses have risen against me, and such as breed out violence. I would have despaired unless I believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong, and let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for the Lord. Do you notice the subtle change there in that last verse? He's been talking about himself this entire time. And now all of a sudden it changes person in the very last verse. Now it's something that you can do. It's not anymore something that I'm doing. Presumably, he has done this. This is the confidence that he has shown. This is the victory that he is winning in his life. And now it's somebody else's turn. And we are privileged to be able to look at David, by no means a perfect example, but someone who loved the Lord, who trusted in the Lord. And we can learn from his example. Wouldn't you want to be that person? Wouldn't you want to be the person who people look to, who not only did in fact trust in the Lord, who asked for a home in the tent of the Lord as the one thing they wanted, not only that, but also to be one who is an example to somebody else? That's what we need to do. So wait on the Lord. Trust in his way. Trust in his path. Trust in his help. I don't know what your struggle is. Well, I know what some of your struggles are. And know some of what my struggles are. And we all have them. But you can do this. You can survive. You can thrive. You can be a stronger Christian today than you were yesterday. You can be a stronger child of God. You can be closer to heaven than you were before. The other may or may not get better. I can't tell you. But this can get better. And this will get better if you determine to make it so. If it becomes your one thing. So make it your one thing. Trust in God. Allow him to have his way in your life.
If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, if in this way you need help with brothers and sisters in Christ with the struggles that you're going through, if you haven't been baptized yet in water for remission of sins, we urge you to put your confidence in God, to allow Him to take not all of your problems, but your biggest problem, and in so doing, give you a coping mechanism so you can deal with the difficulties and the hardships of this life and always remain focused on heaven. If you can take advantage of this opportunity, if there's anything at all that we can do to help you walk with Christ, please respond while we stand and sing to encourage you.